This is Horace the Avenger, and you're listening to another Horace the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit with Truck Roy. But just to do an intro for this show, what we're going to be talking about is a simple concept called Bomb All Cities. When there's a meme introduction, a lot of times in this deal, I get a lot of emails, or not a lot, a handful, where people are confused, buggers are confused about these different slots. You go meme introduction, then you go the short game, which is very hostile, where you're putting up a sticker in public, you're putting up a yard sign, you're putting up a billboard, and you keep it very simple. Or you're talking to someone in a hostile environment, and the more simple you keep it, the easier it is to get your point across. You don't go off on message, you don't go off on tangents. And then there's a third category. And the third category is basically creating content. Bob calls it filling time. He did an article on it about filling time and not being a French general and all that kind of good stuff. And filling time refers to filling a time slot, which is why I want Truck Roy on here, because he fills a time slot from 9 to 10 a.m. every morning, rain or shine, Monday through Friday, which is a tough gig. And, of course, filling a time slot can also mean doing a two-hour show here with this network, or so on and so forth, etc. The difference is you're allotted a lot of free speech. But the confusion comes in when they go back and they go to WhitakerOnline.org and they read about Bob's Best on the blog. And they're reading these different pieces, and where Bob's talking about this or Bob's talking about this, that, and the very things he said, don't talk about or you'll go off message. And it's a paradox. It's not a contradiction. It's just a paradox. Well, a paradox is a contradiction that's nonetheless true, but it's dependent on free speech. Most of the time, WhitakerOnline.org/blog is a coaching blog. So he's at the first segment, introduction of a meme and how to stay on message, and the hostile game, where you have no free speech. In other words, you don't have a lot of time to get your point across. So if you go off on tangent on, let's say, black crime stats, or you go off on tangents on Zionism, that might be the only point you get. That might be the only point you get in. We want to get in our particular memes about white genocide. We're not interested in all that other stuff in the first phase, because you don't have a lot of free speech. You know, if you're looking at a billboard or a sticker, we're not going to get too complicated. We're just going to put it out there and make them cover white genocide. That's kind of the whole ideal. And that's kind of at the coaching phase, that's where he sits. And that's his mindset. So when you're reading those blog entries, what he's doing is usually, it's not a coaching blog at that time. He's basically creating content. He is answering questions that come up. And one of the things he employs that I think is good to do, he does it all the time, but especially if you're at war, is Obama City. You know, if most people wouldn't say a lot of the stuff Bob Whitaker says or writes, they'd be afraid of offending someone. You know, this is one of the challenges with being on message. Well, I can't say that. They're Christians and I'm a good Christian. And, you know, yeah, they're a little anti-white and they kind of support our genocide. But, you know, I'm a Catholic and I don't want to offend them. Or, you know, I don't want to say this is about Zionism and they're Christian Zionists, or my friend is Jewish, blah, 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 blah. And by the time you're done, you pretty much rendered yourself ineffective. In a war, you don't worry about offending people. And so when you're reading those particular pieces on Bob's Blog's Best or National Salvation, Bob's basically bombing all cities. That's what I call it. In other words, if a city houses an anti-white, or in many cases, if someone at the city just says something stupid, he'll bomb them. But if a city houses anti-whites, it really doesn't matter whether it's a Christian Zionist city, a Jewish city, a black city, whatever. He'll offend everyone. He's going to bomb those cities. And that's pretty much the mentality in a war, because you're up against an enemy that will go, they'll firebomb Dresden, they'll go Hiroshima, Nagasaki in a heartbeat, because they know they're at war. Yeah, they openly acknowledge that. They're at war on all fronts. Anti-whites are at war on all fronts. All anti-whites are, and they're brutal. They're brutal, so you have to not worry about offending people. And, you know, that's the thing. There's different stages. In creating content comes down to whether it be for a blog entry and or whether it be for a long show. You know, you're creating content, filling a time slot. The more free speech you have, the more you're at liberty to speak to that particular audience, obviously, to get your point across. If you have the time, you might want to do examples, analogies, things that are in the public consciousness. I always use China because China, they're just brainwashed with China right now. Everyone's just China, China's going to get us, China's going to take over. You can use that for an analogy, which I tend to do. Bob sits at the shorter end of the shift. Bob is coaching at the meme level. Just get your point across in a hostile environment. The vast majority, I assumed, going back, even when I did the first so many podcasts, that there was no website for the first year. I assumed we would only ever be in that first segment. I didn't think I'd be talking to a guy that fills an hour time slot on Rinse Radio 5 days a week. I didn't think necessarily, I didn't count it out. I operate with plans. In war, you have strategies and you have weapons. You don't have 30-point plans. We don't do that. So I didn't really think that, okay, I'm going to have to do a two-hour show on Red Ice, and doing two-hour shows, believe it or not, is the most exhausting thing you could do, and they're going to have an outline of what we got to stick to and that type of thing. For instance, if Bob were to write an article, be asked to write so many thousands of word article on Mexican immigration for the Washington Post, Bob would take that in a heartbeat. You wouldn't see just the mantra. You're going to see all kinds of other stuff. He's probably going to bomb a few Mexican cities. He's going to bomb some anti-white cities. You're going to hear white genocide. You're going to hear the words anti-white. But it's going to be in the format that the editor asked him. Why not? You're giving your free speech. Follow their format. You know, they're letting you say what you want to say under their format. Go ahead. And that's kind of the thing. And I want to bring Chuck Roy in here now because he is a master at filling time slots.
Yeah, I'm probably better at filling time than staying on message sometimes, but you're right. It depends on what situation you're in. Sometimes on the show, Horace, I've got to switch from one to another in a heartbeat. You know, when you're in full-fledged verbal combat, you definitely have to stick to those talking points.
Sure.
It's suicide to do anything else. And so I can have an easy-going, free-flowing conversation going on, running down all kinds of rabbit trails, and then we'll have a caller. And this happened the other day. A caller calls in, and he starts, you know it's going to be a bad call. He starts with, well, last time I called in, you said I was anti-white, and da-da-da, are you going to let me talk? Well, you know, right there, I'm already switched modes. You know, I'm into warfare mode now. And so I say, well, why is it that you're anti-white? You know, I've forgotten whatever topic we were talking about before, and we're going for the throat now. But if you do that, I mean, if you use those hardcore tactics in a casual conversation, you're going to come off like an a-hole. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, perception is everything. You've got to lead any anti-white you're talking to into that landmine and then spring it on him. And when you're dealing with a kind of a fence-sitter audience, you can't be openly hostile. You got to entertain and then use the terminology.
Right. I mean, that's one thing I've told Beefcake. I believe I told Beefcake. I've told many others that if you're filling a time slot, you have an hour to say what you want, to work in white genocide, work in words like anti-white. I mean, you're following the format, but at the same time, what you want to do is keep filling the time slot. Because in a meme cycle, the only thing that ever changes are the memes. We've watched our enemy fill time slots and create content, and that's all they do to get their meme across. They're not in a hostile environment. And even, here's the thing, even in a normal society, you could be in a hostile environment and have to know what Bob's teaching you. It may not be 80% of the time, like most of us are in. It may only be 20% of the time you're in a hostile environment where there's, you know, flame throwing across the TV set and they're arguing and they're both on message and that type of thing. And that's kind of like the situation you're in now. And I find myself not in a hostile environment, a certain percentage of the time. In other words, someone really wants to talk about something and they're giving me time to do examples, analogies. It's not a hostile environment. If someone's letting you speak, it's not a hostile environment per se. Then there are other times where you really only have one or two sentences to get in edgewise. That's it. And obviously you want to put in one of the golden oldies. Something that works. But that's kind of what surprised me is we're giving a lot more, we're creating a lot more content, we're filling a lot more time slots and that type of thing.
And I think it's a real gift. You know, if we look at the success that the anti-white opposition had, most of it was not by getting on our television ads and screaming racist at people. What they did at white people, what they did is
they did that a few times.
But you know, the majority of it was entertaining television shows that just came from an anti-white perspective, and it was, you know, it was entertainment. It just had that bent to it.
Entertainment's probably more deadly than anything else because sure. People are disarmed.
Yeah, and when we say something like an anti-white perspective, a perspective is extremely broad. I mean, that goes everywhere.
Right.
And we come from a pro-white perspective, a white normal perspective. And so we're going to encounter the anti-white bias that's in our society everywhere. I mean, you could be talking about dog grooming, and I'm sure it'll come up. And so there's always a war to be fought. It's just sometimes it's a lot more in just putting our perspective out there to replace the anti-white perspective. And again, you could be talking about growing flowers, or you could be talking about Jews, which we do a lot on the Rents Radio Network. Whatever you're talking about, the anti-white perspective, that narrative is well known, and you're going to be able to challenge it in every realm. But a lot of times when you're filling time, it's going to be, you're going to do it through entertainment and not necessarily by punching anybody in the face.
Yeah, the best type of filling a time slot or creating content is something where you can engage an audience through point A to point B to point C and totally have a creative control over what they see here and feel for that particular time period. Anti-racist Hitler, of course, is the mantra, and that's, you know, it's 10 minutes of just the mantra. It's just all the white genocide message. It's just in a very entertaining format, very unique. But that is one of the great things about animations. sometimes in a talk show, things will come up. You do a live show. I don't necessarily do live shows. I'm cooking up, they're basically in the process. Most people don't know how this works, but basically, you know, the producer at Red Ice Radio, I'm going to be going back on there to talk about, but I don't know what I'm going to be talking about yet. You come up with a format and they want to stick to the format based on previous success or based on what they want to hear about. And, you know, you want me talking to that many people for 2 hours, I'll talk about whatever I need to talk about. I know the audience quite well, but that is kind of how it works. You know, if an editor at Washington Post asks you to write something, you know, you pretty much have to conform to those standards. You really can't worry about offending someone because you might have to bomb a city full of anti-whites that happen to be Lutherans. Who cares? If you're worried about offending Lutherans, you're not going to be very good fighting this battle because there's all kinds of crazy Lutheran charities doing all kinds of crazy stuff, you know. But that's one of the things I learned from Bob. You know, if you're filling content or creating content or filling a time slot, don't worry about offending people because they're always going to be offended by something you said, you know.
Right. Well, and, you know, I probably live in a little bit different population than most of the audience does. And depending on what your workplace is like or what people you're talking to, you may have to be a lot more, be the turd in the punch bowl, as Whitaker says. Where I'm at, you know, being polite is important. You know, in the South, politeness is highly valued. And so it's just a little bit of, you know, sticking to the message, but not coming off like a jerk. And there's, you know, if you're dealing with a reporter, you're dealing with someone who is going to have an anti-white bias, I think you can be a little bit more hardcore about it. But when you're dealing with the average coworker at the workplace, you know, you want to be firm in your position. You want to be clear on your position that you're against white genocide. But you don't have to repeat that over and over and over again until everybody leaves the lunchroom.
Right. you know, it's kind of counterproductive.
Right. How to it win works good on the internet, though.
How to win friends and influence people. Yeah, a lot of these guys can't differentiate, or there's always a handful that can't differentiate. They don't quite get creating content. They don't quite get what's going on, the differences, or, you know, you can't really coach creating content. So Bob's just sitting at the front end of the line, and really his mindset in the last interview I did with him, his mindset is what to say if you're on TV and you only have a minute. Well, and that's a good mindset for a coach because that is coachable. I don't know that you can coach someone to sit on radio for an hour.
Well, that's true. And, you know, learning that skill set to be on television for 1 minute and get your point across is fundamental. That's step number one. Everybody's got to learn that because that's the hand-to-hand combat. That's the nuts and bolts of it. And you can never forget that. That you can never replace that with a nice personality or an entertaining talk show. The actual hand-to-hand combat that the guys do over there at Bugs on comment sections and stuff is the first thing. It's basic training that everybody's got to learn. Once you get that down, then you can mess around with other stuff a little bit. But if that's all you do, you know, it's the most effective thing. It's the fundamentals.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, that's for sure. But, you know, a lot of times they're just a just confusion of the different concepts. You know, we're in a hostile environment, but it's not as hostile as it was, say, 7 years ago. 7 years ago, you know, every time I would use something, it would end up in a fight. Anymore, it's not quite the same environment. And you've been around a long time. But it's not quite the same environment. People are starting to ask a lot of questions. They're starting to listen more, and I'm talking about white people, even other non-whites. They want to know what's going on with this stuff. It's a little bit different, but there's always someone that you can trigger. And Bob's good at writing memes that trigger the whole entire place, you know?
Yeah, and it can switch, just like I gave the example on the radio show. The same thing can happen in the lunchroom. You know, you can be having a pleasant, mild conversation, and here comes the political correctness officer that overheard something you said, and bam, you're back to hand-to-hand combat. So you've got to be able to know when to turn it on and turn it off.
Yeah, that's the key for creating content, because it's going to be a pretty short episode if you're just saying one line, of course. Just like Bob. Bob is very good at creating online content. He's very good at writing articles. If he's just going to put in the mantra, you know, Washington Post wouldn't be asking him to do a couple thousand words. If you're asking to do, I don't know how they, what editor, I don't know how their editor from Washington Post uses, you know, okay, this many paragraphs, this many words, I don't know how they handle that when they do these guest writing type things. But I'm just using that as an example. He's going to conform to whatever editorial standards he has to get that point across, to get his message across. Doesn't mean it won't have the mantra in it, just probably having it from a different perspective. But, you know, typically if you're on the air with Rents, or if you're listening to Truck Roy, he's not going to worry about offending some anti-white by getting personal regarding, you know, Christianity or Zionism, or you really can't worry about that. You really can't worry about that. Because as soon as you do, you're over with. Like with an animation, this next, I got a new animator, and she's worried about this or worried about that. I just said, bomb all cities. I don't care how offended someone gets by Eyes of the Robot looking like Zionist stars. I don't care about any of that. They're all anti-white, whatever. You know, those cities harbor anti-whites. Big cities harbor anti-whites under the Zionist label. I don't really care how offended someone gets, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing about the entertainment angle on it is it softens up your targets. And as this goes forward across the white world, more opportunities are going to open up to go after them hardcore, you know, to be in their face after you've got them softened up and after you've turned some of the crowd. Which is happening. It's happening right now. I mean, the memes are getting out there, and it's changing perspectives. And as we start getting ground, we can be more and more aggressive in more and more places. If you think of the way this happened with the enemy, you know, they didn't come out in 1950 and, you know, start doing the Bruce Jenner thing or anything. You know, they gained a little bit of ground. They got a foothold. It started to change people's perceptions to an anti-white perception. And then from there, they started, you know, full tilt pressing, and you don't let up. You know, you don't let up until you smell the rot of the pink rabbits, as you would say. So, you know, sometimes you're going full blast. Sometimes you're going 10% and you're gaining an inch to get under their skin, and then you can go full blast. The end game is always the same, which is, you know, we've got to stop white genocide. But, you know, sometimes you go full blast, sometimes you're doing entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably one of the key differences. Obviously, if you're creating content, you want people to, you want them to come back and read more. You want them to come back and, you want them to come back and see more. You want them to come back and hear more. You know, last thing you want to do is to be on a show for an hour or whatever, not get asked back because, you know, you're boring or whatever.
Well, and, Bob Whitaker mentioned that on the interview you did with him, that he's probably the most boring guest ever. He is pretty boring. I mean, and that, I think, highlights an important specialization. Bob Whitaker.
I think he's boring. He's not boring to drive around with. He's hilarious to drive around with. But that's another story for another day. But I think when you start talking about this, he's at the front end of the game. Where he becomes rather entertaining is when you read his writing. So he's just a different type of content creator. He's not ever going to fill a time slot. He's not interested in talking for 2 hours. God, that it's tough to do. And anyhow, that's not his cup of tea. But he can write. You can write.
Well, that's my point. I mean, what he does is essential. I mean, we wouldn't have the mantra without him. So, I mean, he's creating.
Well,
there's a lot of times
out of the, there may be closing in on 5,000 blog posts now. And if you go back, it's not always a coaching blog. So he's not always a meme introduction and the short game. The short game is, of course, a sprint. It doesn't last long. These engagements with anti-whites, they don't last long periods of time. Even on Twitter, they aren't going to last forever. You're not going to have some two-hour flame war with an anti-white most of the time, in a very rare case, maybe. So he's at the front end of the ticket. Where the problem comes into is when they read back the blog, he's not necessarily, it's not always, it's only a small fraction of the time been a coaching blog where he's coaching on that front end in the short game. And what he's doing the other times is creating content. He's talking about what people want to talk about, or talking about current events, or talking about someone who said something stupid in the comment section. And he bombs their city, you know. And so it's rather entertaining. He is an entertaining writer, in my opinion. If you ever read Why Johnny Can't Think or whatever, but he's not someone that would be necessarily entertaining to do a 2-hour show on something, you know. Some particular network. The stuff that he could do that would be entertaining would probably be, he can't talk about it because of national security. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. The thing is you might have a guy who knows everything in the world about crafting a sword, and then you might have a guy who's an expert sword fighter. Now, those two skill sets don't necessarily overlap, and the guy who's an excellent sword fighter may not want to know the ins and outs of how that sword was made, but they rely on each other. Both are essential. You know, without the sword, the guy wouldn't be able to sword fight, and without the sword fighter, the sword is just sitting there. And so, you know, I think I'm incredibly indebted to Whitaker and the others there that craft these little memes. I mean, the term anti-white perspective, you gave me that from Whitaker and from those guys. You know, I use that all the time, and I wouldn't be able to.
Assuming I got all my stuff from Bob. I don't make stuff up, but someone told me I made that up. Speaking from the anti-white perspective, or you're speaking from the anti-white point of view, because I talk historically. I'm probably the bugger that ends up talking more than anyone else historically. I'm a talker. So I always give Bob credit because I don't write any of this stuff, but I don't know where that came from. I just assume Bob, I picked it up off Bob. I pick up everything off Bob historically, but that goes back a long ways. That's a nice way of calling someone anti-white. Well, you're speaking from the anti-white point of view. You know, you're not coming out in a nice conversation with your neighbor, and you don't want to start calling, oh, you're anti-white, aren't you? You know, you don't want to start slamming. You're just like, you know, that's the anti-white point of view. And so it's kind of like a polite way to say, okay, this guy just called me anti-white, but in a really nice way. And they'll be like, well, how is that the anti-white point of view? And, you know, you can explain the anti-white point of view. Or you're speaking from the anti-white perspective. You can really rig people with that over and over again. Because in front of an audience, it's actually critical, as you said, sometimes you don't want to seem like a prick. And so if a caller calls in, you're like, well, that's, you know, the typical anti-white perspective. You're not actually calling them anti-white to the audience, but you are.
Yeah. Well, you can say, you know, that kind of makes sense. If you're coming from the anti-white perspective.
Right. Yeah. You're just politely dragging them under the bus. You know, there's two ways to drag someone around. One with the meat cleaver, the other is by their pant leg. You're just by their pant leg got them dragging them in front of the train. So, but usually when you start doing that, you're speaking from the anti-white point of view. You'll be surprised how fast this day and time people shape up. they remember that, like the guy you said called in. He said, you called me anti-white. You probably bothered him to go in. He was probably arguing with you in his sleep the next night. That's how stuff works. No one likes being called a name. Just ask anyone that's, you know, been called racist for years on end. And that's pretty much the way that works.
Yeah, we had a caller that used to call in regularly on the old show that was on WPBR, and he'd always try to come at us from some anti-white perspective, and so I started labeling him anti-white Dave, and every time his number came up on the board, I said, oh, we got a call from anti-white Dave. Oh, that got under his skin bad.
Yeah, it usually will. There's a lot of little sleight of hands you can do when you're being polite. Now, Bob would never probably, well, I don't know. It depends on the situation, but Bob typically is pretty blunt, to say the least. But these are things you want to do in front of an audience to, you know, and they can also be somewhat entertaining to watch someone get out from underneath the anti-white point of view. You know, a lot of times, When I say sound is vibration, someone has went back and read that in Whitaker's blog. That's true. Sound is vibration. It's not us making it up. It's a type of physics. It's acoustics. It's physics revolving around acoustics. And as these memes start gravitating, and let me give you an example, historical example that I did at the Stormfront conference. Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. Now, as that meme came live, they're not putting up billboards. They don't have to do stickers. All they're doing is creating content, whether it be online content, Washington Post, newspapers, and filling time slots. Over and over again, you're going to hear Charles Krautheimer on Fox News. He fills a time slot from 6:45 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every night. You can hear the neocon memes. And what he's going to do, they're going to blast that from the top down. And they don't have to do anything else. If you're creating content and you're filling time slots, you can generate, and someone has a simple meme like that you want to get out, and you know how to get it out, Bugser style, that's all they're doing. Because that's how it's done. But once it gets out in society, it takes on a life of its own because sound is vibration. Typically what you'll see is that more people get interested in the particular topic behind the meme. And it's kind of, if you don't know anything about physics, with acoustic physics and the research going on with sound, I mean, you can blind people with pressure waves, and sound is a pressure wave. You can blind people with sound waves. We don't see sound, so we don't take it seriously. But it's a big deal. You know, if you ever got chills from hearing a Christmas song that you heard when you were a child or something, you know, that's the vibration. This type of thing just grabs hold of people. And as it gravitates through society, the more something's used, the more people become interested in it. It's self-reinforcing. And the more it dictates that particular success. In other words, if you're doing a show on Iran, after everyone's heard Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map dozens of times, you'd be surprised how many viewers you get. You know, people talk about Horace, your Red Ice Creation shows did so well. Is that just because you know what type of content they're interested in? That, yes, you're supposed to do your homework. That's, you know, common sense 101. But you're also have to understand that there is a meme gravitating through society that generates interest right at the end of someone's consciousness is this topic, white genocide, all over the internet, words like anti-white. And they take on a life of their own because sound is vibration. This is something that most pro-white, that's new agey stuff. It's not new agey stuff, it's simple physics. The more something's talked about, the more people get interested in it, even if they don't know they're interested in it. The more you can do a successful show on white genocide. It seems like magic because it kind of is, but it isn't. It's the way things work. The more you talk about Iran, the more people get interested in Iran. Go figure. That's what it works.
Yeah, and, you know, people have a tough time putting up a guard against something that comes from more than one angle. So, for example, if they're driving down the highway and they see a sign, a billboard, that says anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, that is interesting. Haven't seen that before. And that's kind of unique. But if 2 months later they're driving along and they see a bumper sticker on the car in front of them that says anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, now it just came at them from two different angles. And yeah. it's confirmed, and now it really gets resonance.
Or
and
they read it online. What you know, they read it online, they see it in a video, they hear the word anti-white on Fox News, they hear there's always something triggering the same buzzword over and over again. The word anti-white is used so much. It was last used in the late 60s. We didn't invent that. Bob didn't invent that. It's a century old. But it hasn't been used since the late 60s, as best we know. We reseeded that totally with this phrase anti-racism as a code word for anti-white, meaning the meme is seeded. And like flowers, they just start growing all over the place. All of a sudden, you know, anti-white as a word is a weapon. It's like a club. It's like the enemy used the word racist as a club. They did. We have to disarm that and reinsert our little club. So we walk around hammering them with them. And you'd be surprised how many people have heard things just from different angles, getting it from different angles. You can't unhear something. So if you're watching Fox News and they use the word anti-white, everyone watching that actually heard that, even if they're not necessarily conscious of it yet. That's how it works. Repetition takes on a mind of its own.
And with repetition, you know, I remember I read a blog post by Bob Wicker quite a few years ago, and he talked about preachers. And he talks about how most preachers only have maybe a dozen sermons. They just reword them each time so that people don't notice they're repeating the same points. And when you're filling time, it's pretty much the same way. You know, you've got a new news story every day or a different topic you want to talk about, but the repetition comes in that same line, you know, that relates it back to white genocide or relates it back to anti-white policies. And people, it's just like the message coming at you from two different angles. If you're talking about five different news stories, five different topics, and the only one commonality in them all is that you're pointing out an anti-white perspective that's embedded in society, people are going to pick up on that consciously or subconsciously. It's going to reinforce it, and it's more powerful than if you just sat there and gave them the same talking points over and over and over again. The fact that you're talking about different things, but there's one commonality, that's what really does it when you're filling time.
Yeah. Well, the more examples people learn from things in their subconscious that start far away from home than close in homes. For instance, everyone's bombarded with China all the time. So pointing out an analogy of what's going on and using China or using whatever's in the news, Mexico, whatever, you want to use analogies and examples. That's how humans learn. But you got to have time to do that. You got to have free speech and you got to have time. I'd say if you don't have 10 minutes, you're wasting your time. You might only be able to get in diversity is a code word for white genocide or anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. And that's pretty much the way it goes. But this is a pretty simple show because you got two guys on that do quite a bit of work, filling time slots or creating content. White Genocide Project is a pure counter-narrative, meaning that any time an anti-white news piece comes out, they're going to provide a pure counter-narrative to that. There's not going to be any fluff or filler in their counter-narrative. You're just going to get hit with memes. But that is also a great way to do things. There's kind of like a lot of freedom in creating content in and around the message. You just want to cater to the audience you're talking to, and you got to know what the audience is. And the thing will, the memes take on a life of their own because they're out there. The more this stuff gets talked about, the more people get interested in hearing about it from whatever angle you can talk about it. Is there any last words, Truck?
The only thing I'd say, last words, would be try to know when it's time to switch from one mode to another. Because even if you're just talking in the lunchroom, there's going to be a time when you need to play it cool and let the anti-white walk in on you. And then there's going to be a time to unload on them, and that timing is everything.
You know, and if you're creating content online, you're doing an animation, you're doing a video, you're on a, you know, you got an anti-white type Dave calling in, and you know, he brings up Christianity or Lutheran charities or Zionism or Jews. Bomb all cities. If the city's harboring anti-whites, don't worry about offending them. You're not at tea, you're not golfing, you don't have to worry about offending someone on the golf course by saying the Pope's anti-white, which he is. you don't have to worry about that. I get called anti-Semite, anti-Christian, I get called anti-everything because I employ this tactic, but that's one of the great things I learned from Bob about creating content. Now, he doesn't create digital content per se other than writing. He writes. He's a very entertaining writer, and he can create content, writing content. He can write all day long and twice on Sunday, write books and so on and so forth, etc. Has written books. Heavens knows how many he's ghostwritten, and it just depends on your editorial requirements and the audience you're writing for. But don't hesitate, because if you're worried about offending someone, you're going to be pretty much neutered in a war. You know, don't worry about it. You're up against an enemy that will bomb the living daylights out of you, so who cares if you offend someone? Offending someone is not going off message, necessarily. But, of course, you know, it's just part of the game. It's part of creating content. There's going to be paradoxes, apparent contradictions that nonetheless appear true. So when you see Bob coaching at the lower end, the short game, which is staying on message, and it's just how to get your point across, and the point is always a simple one. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white, or pointing out something in mantrastic terms, as we say, using the mantra. It's very short. We want to keep it simple. You don't want to do anything too complicated, because then you're not basically going to get your point across, or if the newspaper runs an article, they're going to print everything but the statement you made on white genocide. That's how that works. Then there's a creating content. And creating content, you'll see Bob will be in there bombing a city. Someone will say something stupid in the comments about he's a Protestant, and he'll say this or that, and he'll bomb their city. He'll bomb that city. You know, it's just it's different mindsets. One's predicated by how much speech you have, how much time you have. Do you have an hour to get your point across? Do you have 2 hours where you have to entertain an audience? Or 10 minutes. Talking for 10 minutes is an eternity. Believe it or not, talking for 2 hours is actually a nightmare. I'll let you wrap it up, Chuck.
Yeah, well, the only other thing I'd add in there is, you know, depending on your circumstances, there are people that can talk for hours, especially people who live in rural areas and that's all they do.
We want as many of them on our side as possible.
Absolutely. But whether you're talking about that or you're talking about watching Sean Hannity and his little foil over there, Combs. If you're watching them go at it, it's not real combat. Real combat is very brief and harsh. That's what you see Bob Whitaker do. That's what the Bugsters do online.
Yeah, there's a couple times of late Bob's went on the news and it was very brief. It was very mantra oriented. And I don't know what all he said, but I know what he put in. He didn't give them anything other than mantra terms. That way they couldn't put in anything else. You know, he didn't give them anything on black crime stats, although it may be relevant. He didn't give them anything other than something simple toward white genocide, something meme specific.
Right, so here's my metaphor. If you look at what people like to watch for entertainment, they might like to watch boxing, per se. Now, boxing is not a street fight. Boxing is fake fighting. I mean, they're really competing, but there's rules in there, and it's set up in such a way so it lasts more than 3 seconds. Now, a street fight might only last 3 seconds, and that's kind of what Bob Whitaker does. I mean, he can just knock you out in one punch. But when you're filling time, when you're doing entertainment, you're doing something more like staging a boxing match. You have, maybe two pro-whites that are arguing two slightly different pro-white positions. Both are opposed to white genocide, and the audience is being sucked into which side are they on? Well, that's very powerful because, you know, there's no anti-white position to take. It's which pro-white position am I going to take in this contest? Which boxer am I going to bet on? And so when you're doing entertainment, it's a lot more like staging a boxing match than actual combat. And there's a time and a place for both. And you know, there's times when you're not going to mess around, when you're just going to knock someone out in 3 seconds. So I think that's really the differences in those two different mindsets that we need to learn to switch between.
Yeah, and most of you will never, you know, I mean, if you're gifted and, you know, just start a podcast and start talking, and there you go. you know, a lot of these guys are online, and that's great. Doing things on Twitter, and some people are all over the map, like yours truly or Truck Roy, where they have to fill time slots. Whatever. It's just the difference is how much free speech you're allowed in the time. You don't want to be a French general, as he says. The French generals did the same thing and lost to Germany every time. You pretty much got to go under. And the more high-end shows you do, the more they are structured. And the more you have to come into the structure and work in those points and relate it to what the audience wants to hear about and relate it to that structure. It's kind of tricky, but it's not rocket science. It's kind of like I said, writing an article where the Washington Post says, here's the guidelines, this is what we want. I don't care if it has white genocide, anti-white, whatever. Just follow the guidelines. Well, then you got to jump through those hoops. That's pretty much the way filling a time slot works in a normal society. That's how Charles Krautheimer doesn't come on Fox and say whatever he wants to say. Believe it or not, that's not what it works. It's not that the Jews own the media, Horace, and he goes on and says whatever does or what. No. He gets across whatever meme he wants to get across in a very easy environment to do it. But there's a guideline. Okay, this is what we're talking about today, and you know, we want some quixotic insight on there, Mr. Krautheimer. And then Israel's the greatest democracy in the Middle East, five times in between. But that's how that works. That's how things really work.
Yeah, and I really think that he's an unpleasant person that's not fun to listen to. I think our average listener out there is probably more entertaining when he's in the break room or you know, eating lunch or he's on a smoke break with his coworkers. And that's why we're talking about
this. He's billed as some genius. He's not. But, you know, he writes books and he creates a lot of content for the Washington Post. But he's someone that I try to use an example of someone that they can watch Monday evening and hear him hit a meme, you know, and see how he does that. Because in a normal society, you're not having to do billboards. You're not having to do bumper stickers. You're not having to do stickers. The things we're talking about are illegal in the United Kingdom. So you're not having to do these crazy things to get out a message. You can sit on the BBC in a normal, healthy, white society and have these discussions that aren't hostile, but you still have to fill time. You're going to fill a time slot or provide some type of entertainment to get your point across, whatever the meme is. And the meme could be self-hatred is sick. I know that's a new one from Bob. It could be we're going to Mars in 30 days. I don't know. Whatever memes they generate. Here's the thing, though. The meme cycle really never ends. It only is a new meme. That's what you're gonna figure out. This doesn't end. There's just gonna be new memes. And if you're in the media, media's there to talk about what has been happening, what is going to happen, and what is happening right at the moment. That's it. In a legitimate, healthy way. And our enemy, of course, takes things and flips everything upside down. And typically, again, there's a structure, and you have to if you're going to create content. And you're going to fill a time slot, you're going to be under some type of structure.
Right, and you know, when you look at the opposite of what we do entertainment, we do filling time, the opposite of that is trolling. And, you know, Bob's stuff is awesome for trolling. You don't have to massage it at all. You just go in there and hit them full blast.
Yeah, it's considered anti-fragile is the term the trolls use. The most famous troll in the world, Andrew Arnheimer, the Weave, they call him, Weave. He calls it anti-fragile, meaning there's nothing you can do. It's after a book. By Nassim Taleb, I think wrote the book, but it basically thrives in chaos. So you're not going to hurt the thing, you know. The rule, like I said, for creating content is don't worry about bombing someone's city that happens to be, you know, don't worry about offending someone. You'll be ineffective. You know, if you're going to produce something like an animation like Anti-Racist Hitler, and you're worried about offending people, you might as well write it off. You know, it ain't going to work. If you're going on Rents Radio for 5 hours a week and you're worried about offending someone, because of some hang-ups you have because you're a Christian and you don't want to be, you know, say that, you know, Lutherans are anti-white or what, this Lutheran charity is anti-white, you're pretty much going to be ineffective. You got to learn to bomb all those cities. But anyways, this is, we're going to wrap this up right here. Thanks a lot for coming on, Truck Roy. Hopefully we illuminated the listeners on this particular subject, because there's always going to be paradoxes. And it depends on whether you're in the short game, that is hostile, it's fast, or whether you're in the long game, which is kind of like a marathon, a two-hour marathon or an hour marathon, where you got to talk about whatever it is you have to talk about. It just depends on where you're at. And we will always want to come at them from different angles. So be as creative as you can in creating content, in your writing. Think about different angles to basically bring in these memes. into the public discourse, public consciousness. And before something comes into discourse, it always comes into consciousness, one way or another. But this is H. Avenger, and you've been listening to another Horus Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And thanks a lot, Truck Roy, for coming on. White Rabbit Radio.